Water. Earth. Fire. Air. Months ago, all of us could come and go as we pleased, in harmony. Then everything changed when the pandemic attacked. Only the TV series, Avatar, The Last Airbender, a series our friends kept telling us about, would stop us from anxiously watching the news. But just when we needed to stream it most, it vanished.
About a year has passed since my cousin and I started podcasting about Avatar. And although we've all been through a lot in this past year, we believed Aang could save the world. And you know what? We were right. After ending the 100-year war, with the help of their friends, Avatar Aang and Fire Lord Zuko transformed the Fire Nation colonies into the United Republic of Nations, a society where benders and non-benders from all over the world could live and thrive in peace and harmony. They named the capital of this great land Republic City. Avatar Aang accomplished many remarkable things in his life, but sadly, his time in the world came to an end, and like the cycle of the seasons, the cycle of the Avatar began anew. This is Kin Folklore, Avatar, the Legend of Korra.
People of Republic City, welcome to Kin Folklore. We're back to explore the world of Avatar by delving into the complexities of its sequel, The Legend of Korra. I'm Andrea.
And I'm Paul, and we're cousins who podcast about our favorite fantasy and sci-fi television shows. A year ago, we embarked on a journey to podcast about Avatar, The Last Airbender, and you know what? It was really great. You should check them out. The episodes are awesome. They're up wherever you listen to podcasts. And we visited the Southern Air Temple, stood with the Northern Water Tribe, and had tea with my guy Iroh in the walls of Ba Sing Se. And finally, we battled the Fire Lord in an effort to restore balance to the world.
Since then, we've covered the worlds of Lovecraft Country and his Dark Materials, and we took a short trip to the Kingdom of Zamunda before returning to the Four Nations to check in on our favorite benders. We love the non-benders too.
Yeah.
We spent the last few weeks discussing the Avatar comics. Last week, we talked about the tensions between benders and non-benders in Cranefish Town in the comic book Imbalance. This week, we're meeting the main characters in Korra in the city that Cranefish Town became, Republic City, in episodes 1-4 of Book 1, Air.
Kinfolk, the revelation is upon us, my brothers and sisters. But we will not take away your adult content. We will serve it up like shipping goodness that's served at Kwong's Cuisine with that beautiful heiress that ran you over in these streets. Let's do it.
Episode 1, Welcome to Republic City, starts with a voiceover from Tenzin, a character we will come to love.
Love.
About how his father, Avatar Aang, told him about the founding of the United Republic of Nations from the Fire Nation colony.
It comes from good stock. Aang Katara are his parents. Good stock, this guy.
Good stuff, yes. In a flashback, we see the Order of the White Lotus arrives at the home of Tanrok and Senna in the Southern Water Tribe and meet the new Avatar, Korra. I'm the Avatar and you gotta deal with it.
You gotta deal with it.
Best Avatar entrance ever.
It's so good.
Korra becomes a talented bender and fighter. She's mastered all of the elements except for one by the time she's around 16. That one is air. We then see our old friend, Katara.
Yeah.
I missed you, Katara.
Oh,
Katara
like
is now grand. Is
Doesn't
now
she grand, look
grand.
Like grand grand.
Yeah, she looks just like her grandmother. And we also meet Naga, Korra's trusted polar bear dog.
Oh, so cute. Love
Soon Naga. After Tenzin arrives with his wife, Pima, who is expecting a child like any minute.
Yeah.
And their children, Jinora, Iki, and Milo.
And Iki is driving Tenzin crazy with the questions. Oh my gosh. She must hang out with Siri.
Iki is super cute, but she is a lot.
Yeah, she's got the Siri from, you know, The Witcher playbook, where she's going to ask you tons of questions, drive you fucking nuts, until you're like, oh my God.
Tenzin has brought some bad news. Yeah. So the situation in Republic City is tense, and he has to go back. So he can't teach Korra how to airbend.
And Korra has a whole, like, teenage fit about this. Fine, whatever. And walks out.
Whole meltdown. Korra's a teenager.
Yeah.
She has her teenage moments. And also, this was understandable. Tenzin is the only airbender master in the world. Like, she even's like, I would find somebody else, but you're it, buddy. And this is your responsibility. Like, you're actually stopping me from becoming the Avatar.
Yeah. It's really, really, it's a good call out. Honestly, Korra has a huge point here. It's like, listen, I'm not like saying that what you're doing isn't important, but I have nothing else. No one else is going to be able to show me. It's really a great call out.
Yeah. I mean, she's kind of stuck here. She does ask if she can go with them, and Tenzin says no. And so then Korra does exactly what Korra will always do, which is just ignore the direction she's given. And she decides to leave. With the blessing of Katara, who wishes her well, and her parents. And she stows away on a ship to Republic City.
I just want to take a minute right here to just acknowledge something that's really profound to me about this for Katara. And I'm going to shout her out. So as a child, not yet a waterbending master, she frees the Avatar from an iceberg because of her bending getting stronger when she was emotional. As an older woman, like aging, she's old now, like grand's age, she also plays a part in the Avatar leaving to go out into the world once again. So both ways, it's just beautiful to me to see these bookends. It's like she's the beginning of both of these lifetimes' journey. And I just think it's really, really special. Anyway, mm-hmm. There's more I'll say about it later when we talk about it, but it's just really cool.
Yeah. She also gives Katara essentially similar advice to what Grand told her and Sokka. Like, This is part of your destiny. Like, you have to go. Like, mm-hmm. She tells Korra, like, I understand you have to pursue your destiny. You have to do this. Mm. I think it's incredible. And it's also just super important that Korra has adults like this in her life.
I agree.
So she stows away on the ship to Republic City, and she gets to Republic City, and she learns the peril of city living real quick, super quick. So there's traffic. The vendors are mean. Police is everywhere. There's an anti-bending protest.
She meets a man who's like chopping it up with her, and she's all like, "Do you live in that bush?" Currently, that is what I do call home. That would be. I mean, she's just not ready for what's happening inside the city.
And then, you know, she has a really not great moment when she heckles the anti-bending protest.
She's like, the guy's like, this bender's here oppressing us. And he's all like, you're oppressing yourselves. Not a good look.
She then encounters the triple triad and interrupts a shakedown and basically announces herself as the Avatar by using all three kinds of bending that she knows.
Yeah, the people on the street are like, wow. They're like, did that waterbender just firebend? Could she be?
She's not subtle.
No.
So after a lengthy pursuit and a police chase, Korra is caught by the police, and she tells the police chief that she's the Avatar, and the police chief is Lin Beifong, Toph's daughter, and she's like, I don't care.
She's like, I don't care. She's like, you're Toph's daughter. Avatar Aang and your mom are friends. And she's like, yeah, and what of it? Like, I don't care.
She's like, I really couldn't care less.
Yeah.
Tenzin comes to her rescue and promises to send Korra back home, but is convinced to let her stay after she notes that Republic City seems to need her. At a press conference, Korra tells the city that she's staying to serve the city in honor of Avatar Aang's commitment to it being a place of harmony.
Okay. And who is her press secretary? Who is the CJ Craig in this situation? I just need someone to get out in front of this and not put her in front of a microphone until we figured out, well, what's the plan here? The Avatar's in town. How are we going to handle this? What does it look like for her to be out here talking about she's going to be here when we have all these other problems that she's unaware of? There was just so, it's like, why did we rush her out in front of the press right in that moment?
There's so many issues with the press in this first season.
So much.
So many problems. She definitely needed a good press secretary. She needs a comms team.
She does. She does.
So the episode closes on a masked man asking Amon, who is our season villain, how he wants to handle this situation. And he says that they will have to accelerate their plan.
I mean, we said this last episode. We've heard this before. This is the same thing as our girl over in Cranefish Town who was over there trying to, like, you know, talking about, well, we'll have to, like, move quicker. Even the Avatar can't stop it. Everything's in motion. It's the same. It's like, wow, okay. Things have not changed that much in 60 years.
Yeah, Li Ling and Amon, similar energy, different sides.
Yes. What? Yes, very different sides of the argument. Can you imagine if they were in the same space at the same time, what would happen? That would be strange.
Republic City wouldn't exist. Like, Republic City would not survive that. They're both kind of, like, obsessive and supremacist, and it's quite disturbing.
It's very, very disturbing. So then we get to episode 2, A Leaf in the Wind, not Leaves on the Vine. You know, like, although I love that. I would love to have heard that again. Go back and listen. It's great. I watched the episode quite a bit. So, episode 2, Korra struggles with her initial airbending lesson. She does.
It's a mess. It's like, frankly, a mess.
It requires her to make it through a number of gates while they're spinning. It does not go well. She basically just runs through it, trying to, like, use her, like, fight, her brute force, things that she's used to doing. And it's not, she runs into every single gate. She hits every single gate. Afterwards, she's listening to a pro bending match on the radio. But she gets in trouble when Tenzin interrupts. Because he's, like, kind of, like, out on pro bending. He's like, bending is an ancient art form, and this is making a mockery of it. He's very, you know, he's a little bit of an elitist when it comes to the bending.
A little stuffy. We love Tenzin, but he's a little inflexible. That's what I'll say.
Yeah, definitely that. One of my favorite moments is when Korra, when he's rescued her in the last episode from Lin Beifong, who's about to get her. Like, listen. She's all like, well, Katara said that I should go. And he's like, don't bring my mother into this. So good. So eventually, Korra decides that she's going to go to the stadium where the pro bending matches are happening. And she swims to the city so she can watch the match. And she gets caught sneaking in. When our guy, new character that we're introducing, Bolin, one of the pro benders, intervenes and says that, you know, she's with him. And, you know, not like that. No, you did mean it like that. For sure, he meant it like that.
He 100% meant it like that.
Yeah, exactly.
Wishful thinking, Bolin.
Yeah, I know. He was shooting his shot. He was like, listen, I'm going to shoot my shot. Here's what's going to happen. Bolin rescues her from the guard. The two of them basically go into the locker room, and Bolin and his brother Mako are on a team called the Fire Ferrets, and they are underdogs in the next match. They win the match due to Mako's excellent bending and footwork. Korra asks Bolin to show her some tricks and reveals herself as the Avatar, to which Mako, who was being a complete dick, realizes, oh, I'm kind of
an idiot. Total idiot.
I'm an idiot. So then back on Air Temple Island, things are not going well with her training. Korra fights with Tenzin, gets really pissed off, wrecks the freaking gates that are the spinning gates, and basically storms off. She's not in. She's done with like this whole trying to learn how to airbend for the moment. So she heads to the arena where the Fire Ferret's third player is a no-show. So he's like, you know, not around, not coming. And she volunteers to sub in, only using water bending, and she won't use any other bending style. So Korra has an extremely rough match. She doesn't know the rules. She bends somebody over the side of the place. We could only like knock them off from the back, and essentially gets pissed off in the middle of it and uses a different element and outs herself as the Avatar
again. Because she just can't. This girl has no restraint whatsoever.
Oh man, what is wrong with her right now? So she gets knocked out. As she's getting knocked out, as she's getting revealed as the Avatar, Tenzin hears on a radio, and he's like, "Screw this! I'm going down to the stadium. I told this girl not to participate in this crazy pro bending." He's gonna try to reel her back in. As she's getting out of the pool from being knocked out off of the bending mat in the bending match, she sees that she's in trouble because she's face to face now with Tenzin. She basically tells Tenzin she's not leaving with him, even though she's kind of got a commitment right now and she's going to go back and finish the match. Tenzin is disappointed and upset, and she heads back in to help the Fire Ferrets. And as she goes back into the match, something remarkable happens. Tenzin looks back and sees that Korra is in fact using the techniques that she was failing at, trying to learn airbending by going through the panels that were spinning. And it shocks Tenzin. Tenzin is like, whoa, he can't believe that she's actually doing it. And in that moment in the match, they win. The Fire Ferrets win, which gives them a place in the Pro Bending Championships. Back on Air Temple Island, Korra comes up and to apologize to Tenzin and announces she's joining the team permanently. And Tenzin says, you know, that he was that was what you needed to actually learn how to do these movements, these airbending movements. And they kind of make up and she runs off without cleaning up the freaking gates that she burnt and wrecked. What's
wrong She's with her? A teenager.
She is.
Episode 3, The Revelation. While the Fire Ferrets are training, the owner of the league shows up and basically shakes down the team, taking all of their winnings and requesting 30,000 yuan for the tournament.
Why even put the cash in their hand? Like, how cruel is that to be like, here's your earnings, and then you're getting charged for this, and charged for this, and charged for this? I'm like, damn.
So I mean, it's harsh, but can we just say not a great moment for Bolin, who they probably would have had a little pocket change left, but Bolin apparently got extra money for groceries that his brother did not have?
Yeah,
and Mako's like, wait, what grocery loan?
Man, if you're in a partnership, you should definitely like clear any sort of financial advances. What's going on? What's happening with that? That's weird.
So Bolin and Mako tell Korra that since her parents died, they've been on their own and they've had to deal with CD characters like this to get by. While Bolin attempts to make money by having Pabu, his pet fire ferret, perform on the street for money, he's approached by Shady Shin.
What a name.
What?
Shady Shin,
who asks him to do a job for the Triple Threat Triad.
Mako, why does everybody in Republic City talk like, you know, they're from New York in the 1930s, see? They're going to get you a copper, see? This is what happens. It's weird. It's like, your brother ain't the owner of you. Come on.
So Mako goes to Air Tempo Island to see if Bolin is there, and he's not. You know, also Jinora and Iki also try to embarrass Korra.
It's really great.
Which is one of my favorite cute. Moments.
Is that the firebending boy that drives you crazy? Does he drive you crazy like you don't like him? Or does he drive you crazy like you like him?
And I love that Korra just earthbends him away.
No, it's so good.
Has no concern for their safety, just earthbends him away. And so Korra agrees to help him look for Bolin using Naga as a tracker. And the two arrive at Central City Station, where they're told by this kid that Bolin is with the Triad. Mako and Korra head to the Triad's headquarters just in time to see him being kidnapped by Equalist. Mm. During the fight, the Equalist fighters use chi blocking. Technique that Ty Lee created is really, you know, it's got legs.
It's taking off like gangbusters. It's everywhere. It's in the Northern and Southern Water Tribe. It's in Republic City. It's got a whole crew of people that are dedicated to just using it. It's great.
Korra and Mako are both incapacitated by the chi blocking. When they're able to get back up, they look for Bolin all night, but they're not able to find him. And finally, Korra has the idea of going back to the park where that Equalist protester that she saw on her first day in Republic City was. While they're waiting, Mako tells Korra that he and Bolin used to work for the Triad when they were kids. Their parents were killed by a firebender when he was 8, and they only have each other now. After absolutely bullying this protester.
Yo, it's wild. I mean,
Korra is so disrespectful to this man.
Avatar is oppressing me.
Korra and Mako decide to go to the Equalist Revelation that evening to look for Bolin. You know, like, unlike Toph, they decide they're going to go in disguise, like Sokka. You know,
yeah, exactly.
They're not going to just bust in because they don't know what they're walking into.
And they get it. And they figure this out because they realize that the map, the flyers that they found has like a map of the location, which is crazy this is like one of the few like Mako like aha moments. So let's savor that. Soak that in because we're not going to get a lot.
So the keynote speaker at this little conference is Amon, who tells a story about how a firebender murdered his family when he was a child. And he tells them that bending has been the cause of every war in every era, and reveals that he is able to take a person's bending away.
It's the most depressing stump speech ever. This is like, this is not the candidate I'm voting for, okay? Like, my life is terrible.
When he said the thing about bending being the cause of every war ever, I was shook. I was like, he has a point.
Yeah, and always the thing about it though is this kind of stuff always has a little bit of the truth in it. Like when he goes with that part that you're talking about, plus the since the beginning of time, the spirits have looked out for humanity, and then he goes into like, and the spirits have spoken to me. Bending has been the problem of all the wars. The spirit spoke to you, really, bro? Because like you're legit saying like the spirits are telling you to take away bending. So now he's positioning, using that argument that we talked about, how the Avatar has always sided with the humans, how the spirits are probably irritated. He's using some of this kind of mythology to make his point, which is scary in itself. But I still think his stump speech needed work.
Oh, yeah. 100%. I agree with you. It is a very depressing stump speech. But he reveals something quite shocking here, which is that he is able to take away a person's bending ability permanently, which in the past, we've only ever known one person to be able to do that, which is Aang, the Avatar. Or I should say the previous Avatar. Yeah. So he brings out the Triad and he takes the bending of their leader, Zolt, first. To save Bolin.
Oh, no. Lightning Bolt Zolt. He's Lightning Bolt Zolt.
My bad. I'm sorry. Let's
get
his full name.
Put some respect on his name. Lightning Bolt.
him and Shady Shin. We have to make sure we have the full name. So to save Bolin, Mako tells Korra to create a distraction so he can rescue Bolin. And Korra manages to create a cloud of steam that, you know, creates chaos. No one can really see anything. And Mako can save his brother. The three barely escape on Naga when Amon tells his followers to let them escape so the Avatar can tell everyone about his power. Korra later tells Tenzin that what she has learned, and he declares that no bender is safe.
Yeah. Yeah. Super, super. She looks stressed. She like, yeah, you know what? You still want to rush up out of the Southern Water Tribe? You don't think it was better to stay over there?
City life is rough.
Life is rough right now for her. So A Voice in the Night, episode 4. At the city council, one of the council members, Tarlok, suggests creating a task force. At least they have some form of government before they're ready to go ahead and just make another police force within the police force.
Can we talk about this a second?
Yes.
Everyone who's ever worked in government groans when people bring up a task force, a committee. Like, oh, okay, so you just mean more meetings?
Yeah.
You can't say it in an email? It's gotta be another meeting.
Yo. The email is a lost art when it comes to meetings. I just need you to send this to me. I did not need to see your face for 30 minutes to discuss this. I didn't need it. Oh, man. Anyway, so, you know, Tarlok suggests that task force will bring Amon in and bring him down. And it's something that is voted on, you know, against his wishes. And Tarlok mentions another person who threatened the city, Yakone, who Aang previously had to deal with 42 years ago. Tenzin's a little bit heated now. Yo, why are you bringing up my dad? And don't ever compare yourself to my dad. I will murk you. How dare you? You're lucky I'm nonviolent and an airbender. You're lucky right now. All right? So he's not trying to hear it. I do have issues with the fact that in all this time to form a government, we still have one representative from every tribe making the major decisions about how this runs. Like, at least they included the Fire Nation and the Water Tribes. But the thing that troubles me is that they still only have 5 people making all the decisions.
Mm-hmm.
That's a real issue. That's a real issue that I see with Republic City. Anyway, while listening to the radio, Korra, who had a nightmare about Amon, hears his voice on the radio, and he's saying that the task force is evidence that the benders want to crush the revolution. Korra's shaken. She's obviously been, you know, has been fearful ever since going to the Equalist rally. Later, Mako is crossing the street when he's hit by a beautiful young woman on a scooter. And he's ready to go. He's ready to be his normal Mako self, grumbly and nasty. She's apologetic when she gets off. Oh, I'm so sorry. I can't believe I didn't see you coming out. He's like, oh, why don't you watch where you're going? Until she takes off her helmet. Mako is sprung.
He's sprung. Asami is a good looking woman.
Yes.
Say it.
She does. She even does the hair flick. She does the hair flick. She lets the hair go. She's like, hey. And he's all like, he gets like the little blushy on his cheeks and the hearts come out. And she says, you know, to make it up to you, why don't I take you out to dinner? To which Mako's like, I don't have clothes to go to that fancy restaurant. She's like, don't worry about that. I got you on that too. Just show up. It's a date. All right. You know what? Wow. What a stunt. I mean, this is a major flex by Asami. Like, you just show up and bring your person. I'm getting the food and your clothing to make you appropriate. Just show up.
Listen,
all right, anyway.
Asami's very existence is a flex.
Yeah, it's true.
Like, she's really cool under pressure. We will see all of these things about her. She's super smart. Yep. She's really pretty. She's fashionable. She's wealthy. Like, Asami is just a flex, period.
Yeah, agreed. Agreed. Asami is the one. So, back at Air Temple Island, the family is about to sit down, have a nice meal. Tenzin's settling in, Pema's settling in. The kids are sitting down. Korra's there, not being too, like, you know, outrageous. She's just chilling. And, you know, just basic, you know, Tuesday night stuff at Air Temple Island. Here comes Tarlok. Interrupts dinner.
Nobody invited him.
No one invites himself. And then tries to use the generosity of airbenders, talking about, well, it's not like an airbender to turn down somebody for a meal. To which Pima gives Tenzin a grill. She's like, I'm an air acolyte. I ain't an airbender. I'm smacking somebody. I ain't making a food for this dude. He gonna take some of your food? That's what's happening? All right, so he sits down. And at dinner, he wants to talk about Korra joining the task force. Now, anyone who knows Korra knows that she's probably gonna say yes, but something's different about Korra ever since she went to that Equalist rally. You know, she got a little bit of act right. You know, something is like, wait, whoa, I don't know everything out here. Yep, you don't. But she still says no. Because she needs to focus on her training with Tenzin. Yeah, I.
Yeah, you're scared of Amon. Let's just be honest. You're shocked.
Oh my God, she needs to focus on her training. That's funny. Good stuff. At dinner with Asami and Mako, Mako tells her that the fire ferrets may not be able to compete because they don't have the money. And he realizes, once they come and give the bill and everything to her, that she may be related to Hiroshi Mato, the captain of industry. Now, here's the question. Do you think that he's like, all of a sudden the light bulb went off at that moment? Like, we do need this money for this competition.
No, I don't think so.
I don't either.
Yeah, I don't. I think Mako was just sort of, because she tells him that she's a fan of the fire ferrets, and she, I think he's just telling her, like, yeah, we may not be able to compete.
I think so too. I think you're right. I sat with it for a minute though, because I was like, well, would I, if I were him, you know, after someone like, you obviously know she's of means, she's able to afford this restaurant, she's got you a whole wardrobe, people are calling her, so you knew something was going on. So, but I think I land where you land, that he wasn't, he was just there because he was really into her, and that was what it was. So, although he's, yeah. If this was their idea as a fill-in for the broodiness of Zuko, they did this times 10. Like, times 10, this guy. You know what I mean? Like, he's got a sad tail for everything. Everybody's having a good time. This motherfucker's sulking. Oh, man. And you know what? The one thing you could always appreciate about Zuko is Zuko failed fully. Like, Zuko embraced it. Like, he was like, I'm going for it. He was full on. Like, I'm going to do this. Even if it was a shitty thing to do, I'm doing it 110%. Mako's so indecisive. He doesn't know. You know, it's like weird. We haven't gotten there yet, but I got tons of dunks for this guy. But he wants to meet him. He wants to meet Hiroshi Sato. And so he ends up going to Future Industries factory. And Hiroshi agrees to sponsor the team so that they can compete, right? Meanwhile, Tarlok is sitting up here trying to woo Korra with tons of gifts. Not woo in a romantic sense, but woo her to the task force, which is almost worse because he's asking her to come and fight against the one dude who could take away the thing that makes Korra Korra, which is being the Avatar. But she isn't interested. When Bolin tries to thank her for saving his life, and I'm going to put thank her for saving his life in air quotes, I think Bolin just wanted to go and hang out with Korra. He's feeling her a little bit. He's like, hey, do you want me to beat up this guy to send you all these gifts? No, it's not like that. He's an old dude. And Okay. So he just, like, basically Korra's shutting down all the gifts. So finally Tarlok sends her a fucking car. He's where's this guy get his money?
Andrea, I know.
He sends her,
like,
a car.
I was like, I don't understand why the city councilman has so much money, but okay.
I mean, it's revealed later how the car gets in play, but it's wild. Tenzin speaks to her at that point and sees how she's feeling, because he's picking up, like, this is kind of weird that she's avoiding all of this. He can sense that she's scared and tells her that it's important that when you're scared to talk about your feelings. Tarlok then sends another gift. This time Korra's like, finished. I don't want his gifts. This, that. She's like, the lady's bringing the gifts. No. This is an invitation. So it's an invitation to a party that he's throwing in Korra's honor, which she attends. And Korra also meets Hiroshi at this party. And the point of the party is to have the press badger Korra until she agrees to join the task force. And she should have took a cue from Lin Beifong, who was like, just because they're throwing you this big party doesn't mean you're special. You've done nothing yet. Not a thing. And at that point, my fiance says, dang, why is she being so mean? And I'm like, you know what, though? She's not wrong. Korra hasn't done anything yet. And it's kind of a good sign to just be like, okay, maybe I should fall back, stay chill a little bit. But no, it's a big setup. Tarlok gets her to get up there, admit that she is not, she's not afraid, and agrees to join the task force. The night, the task force raids a training facility, and at a press conference after the raid, Korra decides to challenge Amon and calls him out as if she wants to go to Weehawken and stand across from Aaron Burr and shoot the fair one. She wants a duel. She wants a duel, like her name is Alexander Hamilton, and she's going to meet him on air over there, the statue of Avatar Aang. Against all the common sense of the world,
A crazy moment.
It's like, even Tarlok is like, yo, I didn't expect you to go this crazy. Like, you're dragging it. Like, stay here. Don't do this. You don't have to do this. Tenzin tries to talk her out. Korra heads to Avatar Aang Memorial Island, and Amon ambushes her with many chi blockers. They basically jump her. Like, she's getting chi blocked. She's shooting fire out of her feet. Still, the chi blocker and everything stops. All her bending stops. And he decides not to take her bending away. Instead, he says, they'll duel later, that a time will come. And he promises to destroy her. He leaves her unconscious, and she dreams a quick dream of Avatar Aang, Sokka, and Toph. And she calls out to Aang when she sees Tenzin running towards her, because, you know, obviously he's wearing the Air Nomad clothing that's similar to what Aang would wear. And when she wakes up, Tenzin is there, and Korra cries and admits that she's been terrified. And Tenzin says, you know, it's okay to be afraid. And the first step is us to being able to conquer our fears is the most difficult one, which is admitting them. And that's where we end.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about some notable moments that happened in this episode. What were some things that stood out for you?
I mean, I think aside from like seeing both, like actually seeing some of the characters that we already love, mm-hmm. but also just hearing about them and finding out what happened to them. Right. So we know Toph had a daughter, mm-hmm. and we know that Katara is still around, and she's now a grandmother herself. Mm-hmm. I just thought the whole checking in with like our old favorites was really nice. And also, you know, we have that moment where is it Jenora or Iki? One of the kids asks about Zuko's mom.
It was Jenora. Yeah, Jenora. Jenora asks and Iki interrupts like Iki does. Yeah, Jenora was like, you know, she's been reading all about her tales, her grand-grand's tales. And she said she, you know, wanted to know what happened to Zuko's mom. And Katara says it's an incredible tale. And she gets ready to actually start to tell it when Iki interrupts. And you know what? It's cool because you can go you see what happens in the search, you know? Mm-hmm, so it's mm-hmm. really a nice nod to some other spin-off content. I like that. I like that scene. Speaking of Katara, though, I got to say.
Wait, before we get to your Katara moment, let's just, I think we have to acknowledge one sad thing that we find out.
What's that?
Sokka is no longer with us.
Yeah.
Let's pour one out for our boy Sokka.
Let's pour one out for sure. Definitely pour one out for... I mean, this guy deserves an epic pour out. He invented the submarine in this world.
Mm-hmm.
He built and forged a sword out of a meteorite.
He names a lot of things. You know, we have Sparky Sparky Boom Man.
Yes.
Because of
him. He named Team Avatar.
That's true.
Named Team Avatar, right? He pissed Katara off enough to get so emotional that she cracked open an iceberg from which the Avatar was freed. He was a ride or die through it all. Like, fell in love multiple times.
Dated the moon.
That's rough, buddy. That's really rough. I mean, this guy has an epic tale. You will be missed. We hope to hear more about your adventures in between Imbalance to now. But let's pour one out for Sokka. He will show up later on briefly, but let's pour one out for him right here. It's a good place to give him some love. And I can hold my thing about Katara because I can start by saying the police are metal benders. And Toph's legacy lives on. Right? She's out here. We even see a statue of Toph in the precinct. And we see a statue of Aang, right? Out there by the memorial.
Mm-hmm.
And we see a statue of Zuko when Pabu's doing his circus tricks. So in the essence of giving Sokka love, where are my Water Tribe statues? There's no statue of Sokka. Mm-hmm. There's no statue of Katara. And they legitimately are the reason why we have the... Legitimately, without them, the Avatar is not freed from the iceberg.
There's no Zuko tries end to the murk 100 him year war.
He yep. finds him. Huh?
There's no end to the 100 year war.
Yes. It is troubling. The thing that's troubling to me when I think about this is that this they have reshaped this world, and their mythology of who they are is such a huge part of the world. So it almost feels like very much like what we talked about in the comics, as if Katara is somehow rewritten in history. Now, they'll justify it and say, well, Katara never was one for the limelight. She was, you know, like kind of like more humble than that. But that's fine if you want to even try to use that. But Sokka's not.
Oh, Sokka loves the limelight.
He loves it. So why is there no... There's no Sokka. And you talk about what would be a better way to heal the divide between benders and non-benders than to have a non-bender who's one of the most pivotal people in the history of ending the 100-year war. Like, to show that you don't have to be a bender to be significant. Same with Suki, right? So here are these people who are, like, super important to what happens, and they're just... It's almost like they're... They're not as acknowledged, at least in what we see in history, as you would like.
Mm-hmm.
Memorialized in statues and things of that nature.
Totally agree.
So that's it for me with that. But I just wanted to acknowledge. I think it's important to think about. You know, I'm gonna say justice for the Water Tribe. Justice for the Water Tribe. Okay. So Korra, you know, one thing is Korra continues to get herself into trouble. What do you think about how impulsive she is in comparison to the previous Avatar?
I mean, listen, Aang was not perfect either. He was obviously extremely immature.
Yeah.
He had his own issues with being impulsive because he could never focus on anything.
Yeah.
But Korra runs into danger in a way that I don't think Aang would, unless he absolutely had to. She makes decisions in a way that, first of all, let's just be honest. Korra is very arrogant.
Yeah.
You know, like when we meet her, she says, I'm the Avatar. You got to deal with it. She's like, what, 4?
Yeah.
Like, she's a little kid.
Yeah.
She's very arrogant. She's very, when she's having her firebending test in front of the Order of the White Lotus, even then she's arrogant, and they're looking at her, looking for her to have some modesty, but mm-hmm. she doesn't have it. She is very confident in her abilities, which I respect deeply, right? Mm-hmm. I respect that she's confident in her abilities, but she also can be extremely arrogant. She doesn't listen. She thinks she knows best. She's very typically a teenager, but also she's the Avatar. And I really appreciated reading The Rift, because Yen Chen's like being impulsive when she had just become the Avatar kind of models is the same thing as Korra, right? She's also just wants to jump in and help wherever she can, but it gets Korra into a lot of trouble. That's why she ends this episode where she ends it, because she doesn't, no one told her to challenge Amon to a duel.
Yep. No one.
No one.
Even the people who wanted her to be on the task force were like, you're tripping. All right, slow down. Like, let's ease into this thing.
And sometimes, you know, when you do things like this, it can get other people put in danger too. So that's something that we have to look closely at when Korra is impulsive, which I think is just a part of her. That's part of who she is as a character.
Yeah. And I think it materializes in each Avatar differently, this trait. I find it very fascinating, like you mentioned Yang Chen, that you could kind of see the parallel to Korra. But, you know, Yang Chen's, successor, Kurik was arrogant. He wasn't impulsive, but he was quite arrogant. You know what I mean? Like, and it got, but he also has other parts to his story that kind of give you a reason as to why you get to know why he shouldered some things that people don't understand, his full story. And, you know, there's more in the lore that you can find out about that. But like, that's a very interesting parallel to me also, is how Kurik and Korra are both from the water tribes, and they both have shared that trait, this kind of like arrogance of like, I know how good I am. Like, physically, there's not anybody who can mess with me. You know what I mean? And it's interesting because Kyoshi is one of the most revered avatars, at least I love her the most, like, and she lived so long, but she wasn't really, she wasn't arrogant, but she had a ruthlessness to her, and I think some of that came because she never felt like she deserved it totally, you know, like being the Avatar, and there's parts of her story that say that. So as you see that, and you get to Aang, and Aang kind of being so emotional and impulsive as well, it kind of, there's a clear line of this kind of impulsive nature that they have, the Avatars have, in each incarnation. It almost feels like it's evolving, and they have to overcome it in different ways. You know what I mean? Aang fleeing because he didn't want to have to be separated, and it leading to 100 years of a war that maybe he would have not been strong enough to deal with it, but there would have been other things that could have happened. A lot of that is the same impulsiveness that we see in Korra, just jumping out here before she's ready, you know?
Mm-hmm. But I will say this about one difference between Aang and Korra is that Aang wanted to learn, and Korra doesn't always think she can learn, that there's anything to learn.
It's true.
And so I think that makes her a deeply frustrating character sometimes, but also a character that understandably, like when she plays in the pro bending match, she thinks she's going to be great just because she's the Avatar, and she learns very quickly that it doesn't matter if you're the Avatar if you don't even know how the game is played. If you don't have any strategy to playing the game, you can lose, right? And so she needs to be humbled over and over again. But I will say that I deeply appreciate how much confidence she has in her physical skills, because she is quite talented in the physical bending aspect.
Yeah, I just draw that parallel between the two, like Yang Chen and Kurik and Aang and Korra, because I think there is a parallel in the sense that Yang Chen and Aang were both highly revered throughout all of the nations and all of the world because of how people perceived them. Even in some of the things that they weren't perfect with, they had a public perception that people loved. And I feel like Korok and Korra struggle with similar things based on the expectation of their predecessor being on them and what that meant for them and things that they created that they didn't even know. When you see, think about the rift, this creates a real thing for Korra that really she has to like deal with that we're going to encounter. So I just find it very fascinating that the air nomads sometimes don't make it so easy on these water tribe avatars.
So what else do we want to talk about here?
The technology.
Yeah.
Technology. That's... And I guess, like, man, what a jump in 70 years. Woo! Lots happening.
It's kind of insane. Like, it's so much to behold, right? So they go from having to power everything using bending. Like, we talked about Sokka inventing the submarine. Well, waterbenders were the ones who kept the submarine moving. And all of the Fire Nation technology had been powered by firebenders. Mm-hmm. So now to see that there's cars and, you know, their communication methods are stronger. Like, they're not using hawks. They're using radio and you know, they're able to get messages out in a faster way. It just speaks to the industrial revolution that happened after the Hundred Year War. All this innovation was able to happen.
Yeah, I love it. I actually, you know, at first I felt, man, this happened. I don't understand it because I didn't read the comics first. I went right from Atla to Korra, and it felt like such a jump. And then, so then when I went back and read some of the comics, it did feel like, okay, this was more incremental than I thought, but it still feels like a big jump, even from imbalance to this. You feel like, man, a lot happened in 70 years, but it's cool. It's cool to see that technology has the technological advancements and what they've meant for the world, you know? I definitely like it. I definitely enjoy that. And I enjoy the kids. Let's talk about the kids. I love Tenzin's kids. I love Tenzin and Pema's kids. They're great. I love them. Iki,
Milo,
Jinora. I love them. I love them so much. They're a fun time. Like when Milo first sees his grandma, you're like, unhand me, strange woman. Oh, that's great.
Yeah, I mean, I just think that the kids are super cute. Tenzin is a great, 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 great character. And, you know, one thing that I like about Tenzin is he's not, even though he's the, like, adult, right? He's also a character who undergoes a lot of development and becomes stronger because of his relationships. I just really, the adults, and I will say this, one thing that I love about Korra that Atla didn't necessarily have is the adults in Korra are really great characters. Yeah. I really like the adult characters. And I like the relationships between the teenagers and adults because, you know, teenagers need to have good relationships with adults, even when they are difficult and hard to navigate. Tenzin and Pema and their family are just adorable.
They're the best. I love them. I love them. You know, shout out to Katang. Let's
Boo.
Listen, the kids don't exist without that pairing. They don't exist.
Sure, whatever. It's a minor concession. I'm just saying that Zutara could have been a thing. But anyway, let's not digress.
This is true.
Let's stay on topic, but you know, Zutara could have been a strong relationship with also cute kids. We don't know what would have happened.
I mean, yeah, but they wouldn't be the descendants of the Avatar.
No, but they would be the descendants of the Fire Lord.
Actually, that is true. And they would be descendants of a Avatar because Zuko is actually a descendant of... So yes, okay. I can see there, but these kids are amazing, and we needed more airbenders in the world, and now we have three little ones. So I love it. I'm a fan. Let's talk about... Let's talk about some of the things that happened theme-wise in this episode. In the teachings of the White Lotus.
So I was really fascinated, especially coming off of, you know, having just read Imbalance. The show is saying something about power and privilege, right? So Korra is the Avatar and is extremely powerful and privileged, literally does not know how money works. Mm-hmm. And in these first few episodes, you really see her make some gaffes because of it. She's not very sensitive to people from lesser means right away. She has a couple of really difficult moments with Mako and Bolin. She just doesn't really see the point of view of people who are less privileged than her. And I think that's really important to who she is as a character, and how, what does it mean to have an avatar who's never experienced the real world in a way that the people have. She's always had access to food and water. She doesn't ever think about it. She's always had protection from the Order of the White Lotus. And she's like being forced to confront these realities that Mako, Bolin, and other people that she encounters have always had to deal with. You know, how do we pay our bills? Like, they literally don't know how to pay their rent some of the time, or get food. And so I think that she's just sort of going through this natural process that you see when people realize that they have advantages. You know, like, a lot of people don't like the word privilege, but it's just to have an advantage over some other people. And I think that she's going through the very natural thing that you see happen to people who have advantages, whatever they may be, experience when they meet people from different backgrounds. And it's interesting to watch because her role is to pursue balance. And if she doesn't really understand how people live and how they experience the world, how can she create balance out of that? You know, we'll learn more about, like, you know, how she's going to figure out how to create that balance, and if she's even able to. But I think it's just interesting to think of her position in this situation. She comes to Republic City and she doesn't even understand how the city functions. Like, she tries to buy food without money.
Yeah, it's so wild. She's just like, and the lady goes, "What good are you to me?" Yeah, it's wild. At least she's not like Hiroshi Sato with his lead off. Like, "So my daughter tells me you're dirt poor." What? I was like, "Damn, dude, that's crazy." He's like, no, don't worry. I was dirt poor." It's funny. Yeah, no, but I agree with you. I agree with your what you're talking about. It was fascinating to see her, you know, navigate that. And I think it was really powerful when she goes, "You know, I don't have anything. Everyone's always taking care of me." And then Mako says, "Well, then I wouldn't exactly say you don't have anything."
Yeah, you know? That was a really good moment. Like, she considers not having anything just like not having a purse with her, right? She doesn't have any money. But Mako considers the fact that she's had a support system that took care of her. Mm-hmm. And he and Bolin never had that.
Agreed. And you know, we talk a little bit about, we spoke earlier about, you know, the many lives of the different avatars and reincarnation. And, you know, as I said earlier about Katara's role in basically being there to shepherd both Avatar Aang, who was eventually her husband, and, you know, Avatar Korra, who grew up in her, you know, under the care of the White Lotus, but was born in her tribe, like born in the Southern Water Tribe. And for me, like, there's something special about the fact that Avatar Aang, who loved Katara dearly, as we all know, and, you know, he loved his family also, though he left them, like, physically, he found a way to get back to the Southern Water Tribe, where he was freed from the iceberg and where he met Katara. And I don't know, man, it, like, that was kind of touching for me, like, to like, as a spirit, to be born in a new person in the same tribe. Like, he could have been born in a Northern Water Tribe. It didn't have to be the Southern Water Tribe to, like, get back there. It was pretty cool. And, just, I feel part of it was so he could have the tutelage and be close to Katara and then see, you know, see all of those things that about, you know, he kind of, when he came out of the iceberg, was also really, really enjoyed the Southern Water Tribe, you know, at the times that he was there. You know, it's like they would go sledding, and that was like a big part of like the beginning of his story. So to see him come back in a new life and kind of do that was really cool. Well, that is episode one, covering episodes 1 through 4 of Korra. We appreciate you tuning in and checking it out. We'll be covering the whole run of The Legend of Korra, and you can, you know, join the conversations that are happening on our Facebook group. Hit up any of our social media, KinFolklorePod on Twitter and Instagram. And also feel free to reach out to us at our email, kinfolklore@gmail.com. And yeah, leave comments and ratings and everything wherever you listen to podcasts. And we'll see you next week.
Bye, everyone.